I looked something up the other day. Someone else, I heard someone else talk about this, and it kind of, I don't know if it appealed to me, but it intrigued me. I actually looked at the actuarial tables and determined when, according to the actuarial tables, when am I likely to die? And how much time do I have left? And according to the actuarial tables, I have 1,073 weeks of life left. And so I said, you know, that's something I should probably be aware of. Because the reality is that often it feels like there's more time, but eventually there isn't any more time. And so one of the things that I did is that I actually read about someone doing this. I would like to credit the author. I don't remember who it is, though. Is that he did something very similar. And every week, he had a jar of marbles. Now, I currently have a jar with 1,073 marbles in it. And I have another jar right now that actually, I started this last week, so there's only one marble in it. And every week, I take one marble out of what remains and put it into the jar that represents what's gone by. Because the thing is that as time goes on, life runs out. As time goes on, there are more and more things that we'd like to do with our lives that maybe we haven't gotten to yet. So the question I want to ask is you is that as you think about your life, is your life on the path that you would like it to be on? Right? Because it's never too late to actually, you know, change the path of our lives. And I think one of the things that's important that as we think about our lives is to look back on the part of your life that's already passed. And if you think about your life as it's already passed, what are those things that you regret the most, right? What are those things that you wish you had done differently? And maybe most importantly, what are those things you wish you had done but you never did? And so now with that framework in mind, and this isn't meant to be a downer, right? I don't think we should be hanging out in our old regrets. But I do think we should evaluate our lives, right? Because, you know, people talk about experience as a great teacher. That's not actually true. Experience is only a great teacher if you evaluate your experience. Evaluated experience is a great path forward. So thinking about the things that you have come to regret in your life, again, not beating yourself up on it, not hanging on to them, but knowing your own experience of life, when you start to think about the time in your life that you have remaining, are you on a path that you want to be on? You know, is your life heading in the direction that you want it to? Right? Because one day, each of us will be knowing we're in our final moments. And in those final moments, are we just going to sit down and have more of the same regrets we had before? Or are we going to say that, no, I'm going to take the time I have left. You know, I have my 1,073 weeks, right? All of you probably have more than 1 week left. I'm counting on that, right? You can do something no matter where you are in your life, right? No matter how old you are, no matter what physical limitations may have arisen, there are things that call to your heart. You know there are. And can you do something with that? Do you see a future where maybe you can kind of get on the path to doing those things? Is that something we really think about? Because I have to say that if we look at our lives, if we look at our future and we don't see opportunity in it, I think it's important to ask ourselves why. You know, if you don't see the chance to do something in the time you have remaining, to do something, you know, I'm going to say bigger, but I don't mean bigger in the sense that it's got to impact a lot of things, but something that's big to you, something big to what's important to you. If you see that thing in front of you that is big and you're not trying to get there, if you're not trying to figure out how to do it, why aren't you? Why aren't I? And I think that for any of us, the question that comes to our mind is that when we see something that's important to us and we're not going for it, the thing that prevents us from doing it is fear. It's fear. We're afraid of something. And so this week I wanted to wrap up the series we started a couple weeks ago. Whoops. Why am I so afraid? And kind of talk about those issues. Now, I do want to make a quick comment. I forgot to do this. Ruthie's not here today, and we have a policy that an adult is never in a room alone with children, so we're leaving the Sunday school door open. So I know it's a little bit distracting, but you guys are grown-ups, right? So you're going to keep your focus on what's happening here, right? Right? If you would like, Miss Bonnie will give you a summary afterwards if you're interested in what they talked about. I will give you a hint. They're actually starting a new book today, The Dead Sea Squirrels, which is kind of cute, where they investigate some Bible mysteries from some squirrels who were there and actually got petrified but somehow came back. Or we're telling the kids they're statues, I think. But they were statues and they came back. So if you would like to know about the Dead Sea Squirrels, Miss Bonnie will catch you up after church, okay? So kind of back to this issue of kind of, you know, why am I so afraid? You know, and we kind of kicked off into this kind of coming out of the election season. But it was driven by something that I felt like I was seeing happen more and more often. That in recent years, people that I'm aware of, and I think honestly the nation as a whole has become increasingly afraid. That we spend more and more of our lives wrapped up in fear of some sort. And so what we did the first 2 weeks was look at a couple things that we thought might be connected to that. The first week we talked about the idea of partisan politics and this kind of whole machine that exists on both sides to keep you afraid, to try to keep me afraid. Then last week we talked about the issue of our circumstances. That our circumstances, the things around us, occupy our attention so much that we get caught up in those. And in both of those things, what's going on are there are all these things that you cannot actually control, right? Whether it's the politics stuff, whether it's circumstances, whether it's these other big issues that you just can't get control over. And when we focus on things that we cannot control, the natural result of that is fear. It just is, because all you see is things you can't control. And in both cases, what we kind of boiled it down to is that maybe the solution to that is to not focus so much on what we cannot control, but to start to look locally. Start to look at the people who are actually in our lives, and the people who are in our neighborhood, and in our region, places where we can actually do something. And if we would start to invest in others, and use the gifts we're given to transform others' lives, it starts to transform our own. That somehow that is the thing that really breaks us out from fear. Now, I think I've come to conclude, this is just my opinion, but I think I can back it up pretty well, is that the solution to our fear does not come by concentrating on the fear. The way we actually get free of our fear is to focus on things that we can control, right? Again, focusing on the people in front of you, the thing we've been talking about the last few weeks. So today, as we kind of wrap things up, I want to look at this idea of maybe that all fear is not created equal. Because if the way we break free of our fear is to focus on things other than that great big stuff creating fear, but we seem to be conditioned to focus on all those things, it means what we need to do is make some kind of change. We've got to do something differently. But of course, what's the problem with change? Change is scary. And so I'm saying that somehow the way to break free of your fear is to do something that makes you scared. Scared is another word for fear, in case you missed it. Right? So what do we do there? Well, I think it comes down to this idea of there are two different experiences that we have with our fear. We have fear from a passive position in many cases. Right? When we're watching only national politics and only national news, what are we doing? We're just sitting back, letting someone else tell us everything we should be afraid of, everything we should be worried about. Right? When we focus on our circumstances, we're just kind of sitting back, being freaked out by things we can't change. But when we do something, when we step out to serve others, when we begin to pursue the path that God has for us, now that's scary, meaning there's fear, but now you're active in it. See, active fear can be energizing, right? Active fear can be motivating. You know, the reason I used to like rock climbing, other than maybe mental health issues I might have, right? But the reason I used to like rock climbing was because it was scary. right? That you would push yourself to the edge of something to improve your abilities, to kind of overcome this emotional fear that was there. Active fear propels us. Or actually, let me say it differently. Being active in a situation that might be scary propels us because you start to see progress. You start to see change. So what I wanted to do this week is walk through another narrative between Jesus and his disciples. Now, the narrative this week looks a lot like the one we talked about last week. It involves Jesus teaching a large crowd, healing people. It involves him putting his disciples on a boat, and there is a big rough sea out there. But it's a different narrative. So to make sure that everyone was kind of riding along with this, I stole one of Bonnie's cartoons. So I have a two-minute version of my sermon coming up for you, and then we'll walk through the scriptures behind it and see what's involved. All right, so here's our cartoon.
Stories of the Bible. Peter walks on water. This is Peter.
Hey-o!
Whoop. Peter was a fisherman who was called by Jesus.
Hey!
Peter saw the many miracles of Jesus.
Wow!
And he heard all his teachings. Great crowds followed Jesus wherever he went. One day after Jesus had done a great miracle, he sent the disciples in a boat across the lake while he stayed and sent the people home.
See ya!
Hey, Jesus!
After sending them home, Jesus went up into the hills by himself to pray. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen, and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them, walking on water. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were terrified.
Ah!
In their fear, they cried out, "It's a ghost!"
Hold on there.
But Jesus spoke to them at once. "Don't be afraid," he said. "Take courage. I am here." Then Peter called to him, "Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water." So Jesus said, "Yes, come." So Peter went over the side of the boat.
Whoa, you're awesome!
And walked on the water toward Jesus. But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and began to sink.
Peter, help me!
"Save me, Lord," he shouted. Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him. Jesus said, "You have so little faith. Why did you doubt me?" When they climbed back into the boat, the wind stopped. Then the disciples worshiped him and said, "You really are the Son of God."
So, how many of you have heard that story before? Be honest, right? If it's okay if you haven't. Sorry, it's okay. How many of you heard it as a story of how big Peter failed? Because I don't think it is a story of Peter's failure. And as we walk through the scriptures, I think we see that it's really not. Right, so I just want to walk through this kind of verse by verse and see what's going on. Now, as the video showed us, right, that Jesus had been out there serving people. Again, it was a situation where he had been there all day long. It's a long day. He's tired. The disciples are probably tired. This actually occurs right after the feeding of the 5,000. So they'd had to kind of do all that work of kind of passing the food around. And it says that, well, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side, while Jesus dismissed the crowd. So this is a key difference, right? Is that Jesus is telling the disciples to get into the boat, go ahead and travel to the other side. But Jesus doesn't go with them in this case. Right? Jesus says, "I'll meet you guys over there." Right? For Jesus, after he had dismissed the people, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. And later that night, he was there alone. Now, this is an interesting thing. This kind of ties back to something I talked about a little bit last week. Remember I said that one of the things that's important to remember is that we are both physical and spiritual beings. Yet we tend to focus a lot more on our physical side. Like when we get physically tired, we rest or we go to sleep or something like that. But notice that Jesus is taking care of his physical needs, his emotional needs, and his spiritual needs, right? That he's physically resting. He's getting away from the crowd for a little bit to kind of recover. So that helps him emotionally. But he also spends time with God, which recharges him spiritually. And one of the things I think that can so often cause us to have a sense of burnout and hopelessness is when we don't care for that spiritual side of us. That we only see the things that are right in front of us and we lose that connection with our deeper selves. We are not active in our connection with God. And this is so important that Jesus himself, who the Bible teaches is God, still needed that connection to the Father as part of his being recharged. So Jesus takes this time to connect with God and to recharge. But now for the disciples, as they're traveling, their experience is really different. Now remember that this journey actually happens kind of overnight. So they've gotten to the end of a long day. They are certainly tired, but many of them were professional fishermen, so they would have been comfortable sailing at night. But it's kind of interesting is that according to the cartoon, it says that they run into Jesus about 3 o'clock in the morning. What the Bible actually says is that, I think it's the third watch. Anyway, it's one of the watches. And what they did is in that ancient clock, they divided up into 3-hour windows. So it's somewhere between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m., which means that they've been on a boat, on the sea, in the wind, fighting the waves since probably just after dark last night to just before the dawn. So they are physically exhausted, right? They're going to be emotionally torn up. And in fact, the narrative tells us that the boat was already a considerable distance from the land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. So for them, this journey is getting hard. And you know, you think about this, it's like, well, I'm doing what Jesus told me to do. Shouldn't that be the easy road? That's kind of not how it always works. I mean, sometimes it comes together, but sometimes there's difficulties in the journey. All right, we saw that last week with the storm. We see it again this week with the winds. So, you know, they're probably kind of tired. They're probably frustrated. And they're kind of like, where's Jesus? Like, you know, why are we going through all this? What is he doing? And finally, he does appear. But what we find in the narrative is that the people are not happy to see him. It says, surely before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said. And they cried out in fear. Now, they had seen Jesus do many amazing things, but they had never quite seen this. And it's important to note that he's not just walking on the water. He is walking on waves, right? Just rough, you know, tumultuous water. And an important thing to understand, like, why did they go, oh, it's a ghost, as opposed to, what is that? They say it's a ghost. It's important to understand that in ancient Hebrew literature, rough water was a representation of evil, of chaos. So from their perspective, the narratives they had heard over and over again is that rough, tumultuous water is chaos, it's evil. So they're like, what kind of evil was rising up from this? Like that would be kind of their natural perspective based on the narratives they would have heard. But now Jesus is aware that they're afraid. So aware of their fear, says Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid. Now, in that moment, what would you do? I mean, what did most of the disciples do? Most of the disciples just sat there. As far as we can tell, they didn't really do anything. But for Peter, his reaction was different. Right? Peter calls out to Jesus. He says, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. So Peter sees Jesus there, and Peter wants to step out. Right? While the rest of the disciples sat there fearful, Peter wanted to do something. And one of the things that I always like to point out in this is that Peter has a real reputation for being impulsive. And it is a well-earned reputation. It's why he's my favorite character in the Bible, right? Because he often seems so impulsive. But I don't think he's being impulsive here. I think he's actually showing us kind of how do we decide to step out? How do we understand the steps that we should take? Because notice that he does ask Jesus for direction. Right? He says, you know, come to me. Tell me to come to you. But notice before he even does that, he says something else. He says, Lord, if it's you. In other words, I'm not going to rely on just my own idea of what I should be doing. He's listening to the voice of Jesus. He wants to say, Jesus, if it's you, tell me to come to you. I'm going to rely on you, Jesus, to help me know what my call is. What am I supposed to be doing? What should I do next? I mean, one of the most difficult aspects of our faith walk is what the Christian word is discernment, right? Discerning, is this what I'm really supposed to do, or is this just something I want to do, right? Now, there's nothing wrong with doing something you want to do, probably not hurting anybody or anything, right? But there's nothing wrong with doing something you want to do. But understand, if you just decide to do something you want to do that God's not calling you to do, God said, well, that's your choice. Go for it. See how it goes. The difference is that if we actually discern that God is calling us to do something, the promise is God is in it with us. That God will walk it out with us. That God will give us the support and help that we need along the way. So when we decide to step out and do something, it's really, really important to know whether this is just something I want to do, I'm going to go for it, or no, this is something God's calling me to do. And then I'm going to follow his leading. I'm going to trust him to show me the way. Then I'm going to be willing to do things that I'm not sure I can fully figure out on my own and believe that he'll be with me in it and bring me through it. So how would Peter know? How would Peter know if it was really Jesus? Well, he'd hear the command and he would recognize Jesus' voice. Why would he recognize Jesus' voice? Because he spent lots of time with him. He was in a relationship with him. He talked to him all the time. So how do you and I know whether something is just our own personal desire and we want to attribute it to God, or is it really coming from God? How do we know when it's God's voice? Because we don't hear an out loud voice. Right? What we hear is a leading inside, a guiding inside. And how can you tell whether that's just your own emotions or it's really God leading you? Well, you got to learn his voice. You got to talk to him. We talked about this last week. You want to talk to him. You want to be in prayer. You want to hear from him. Right? You want to read his word. You want to be in teaching together like this. You want to be surrounded by people who are also seeking God's leading, who can support you in your efforts. Right? Just like we get to know someone's voice by interacting with them in our physical world, we get to know God's voice by interacting with him in our spiritual world. So when he hears Jesus' voice, he knows that it's Jesus. And Jesus says, come. In other words, go ahead and take that step. Yeah, I know that you're scared now because of all the wind, and I know that that first step that I'm calling you to take is also scary, but I am calling you to do this. So take that step. So Peter steps out of the boat. And the important thing is that no one other than Peter even makes a move to step out of the boat. So it says, Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came towards Jesus. Now, how frightened must he have been? How frightened must he have been? But he took it. So what that means is that every person in that boat was afraid, including Peter. But for everyone else in the boat, they were in a passive state. It's all so scary. It's all too much. I just want this ride to be over. I just want to be done. But for Peter, he was taking action as Jesus led him to. He stepped out and being active in his fear, following his call, enabled him to carry forward. While everyone else kind of just sat there as spectators, Peter was out walking on the water. You know, and I believe that again, he was as afraid as anyone. But the difference is he's stepping out in faith. He's doing what Jesus has called him to do, and he makes progress. Now, we don't actually know how much progress he makes. You know, did he get one step in, get two steps in? How many steps did you get in? Right? How many steps did I get in? Right? We know that he made some kind of progress because it says that he came towards Jesus. But as he's navigating his way towards Jesus or walking towards Jesus, something begins to happen. It says that, but when Peter saw the wind, he was afraid. Beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Now, when did Peter begin to sink? Why did Peter begin to sink? Because he changed his focus. Right? As he began the journey, he was walking because he was focusing on Jesus. He was focusing on doing what he'd been called to do. He began to sink because he started to change his focus. His focus moved off of Jesus and towards the opposition, towards the barriers, towards the things that were scary around him, and he started to focus on those. And as he focused on those, it blocked his view of who was calling him. All he saw was the fear and the wind. That for him, he had gone from being in this active state, doing something productive, following his call. He began to move into that passive state. What are all the things around me that are so scary? What are all the reasons this is going to fail? What are all the reasons that I'm just not going to make it? And as he focused on all those reasons he's not going to make it, what did he do? He assured that he wasn't going to make it. So now as Peter begins to sink, the narrative tells us, immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You have little faith," Jesus said. "Why did you doubt?" Now, the first thing I want to focus on there is that how long did it take Jesus to reach in and grab him? Did it immediately. Right now, I'm not saying that when you're following your call in life that you will not have challenges and you will sometimes wonder what's going on. But ultimately, Jesus was there. And then Jesus says to him, "Why did you doubt?" And this so often is, in my experience, at least I hope yours is different. In my experience, when people tell me this narrative, when they say that Jesus said to him, "Why did you doubt?" They see it as a finger wag. Why did you doubt? Why did you do that? And I don't think that's the case at all. Because notice what happens next, right? So after this whole exchange that Peter's been walking towards Jesus, he gets overcome with fear. He begins to sink. Jesus grabs on, pulls him up. It says, they climbed into the boat and the wind died down. So given the timing of that, it seems that Jesus caused the wind to stop. Well, we'd seen that in last week's narrative, that as the storm rose up, Jesus said, you know, settle down, and it stopped. And if the wind stopped as soon as they climbed into the boat, it would appear that Jesus did that again. And now if you're Peter, you're like, well, you know, if you would have just done that 2 minutes ago, all right, I wouldn't have sank. If you would have just shut the wind down, I could have kept going. And that's probably true, because he wouldn't have had those distractions. But maybe it's possible that Jesus' goal for Peter was different than Peter's goal. Maybe Jesus' definition of success here was different than Peter's. Right? Peter was focused on kind of making it. Initially, he was focused on, I just want to get to Jesus. I want to get that far. And that's a good goal, right? But maybe Jesus wanted Peter to understand something even more important. When Jesus says to Peter, "Why did you doubt?" What he wanted Peter to do was evaluate the situation. Not that you're so bad and so wrong for losing focus, but evaluate your experience. Why did you sink? You sank because you got focused on the fear around you, those circumstances that you can't control. You sank because you lost your focus for where Jesus was calling him to, and you got focused on the things around you. Because Jesus knew what lie ahead for Peter, right? When Jesus ends his earthly ministry, who does he put in charge? Peter. And so he knew Peter would be responsible for leading this fledgling church, new church that's kind of growing up. The first person to lead it when Jesus is no longer physically here. And he knew that in doing that, Peter would experience opposition. He would experience difficulties. And he had to be prepared for that. And so what Jesus wanted Peter to understand is that when you're doing big things, when you're pursuing your call, you are going to experience opposition. You're going to experience difficult things. There will be times where you'll be scared to death. But if you want to keep doing what you've been called to do, you need to stay focused on the one who's doing the calling. And he wanted Peter to learn that lesson in a safer place. I guarantee it stuck with him because it didn't feel like a safe place while he was sinking. But Jesus was right there physically with him. You know, and this is why I kind of, as I look at it, I see this as Jesus really, really preparing Peter for the work ahead. You know, and the thing that I find interesting is that Peter experienced something absolutely incredible. Right? For Peter, he was an active part of this experience of walking on the water, of connecting with Jesus. Everyone else was just a spectator. Everyone else just watched. And here's the thing. The only person who ever... I will wait. Okay, we got to get a new system because apparently you guys cannot hold focus when children walk out of a room. We'll try this again. This is kind of the whole point, people. When you look at a situation, right, all of them, if all the other disciples are there, they're sitting in the boat as spectators, watching something go down. But who was the only person who knew what it was like to be sinking and feel Jesus' hand reach down, grab them, and the strength in that hand pull him out of the hole that he was in? Peter was the only one to ever know that experience, an experience that would never leave his memory, an experience that, although it looked like failure from the outside, was just a necessary step in growing in his own faith. And that's the thing we want to keep in mind in our own lives, right? Is that as we step out to do the work that God calls you to do, as God calls me to do, there are going to be times where it's not going the way we want. And there are times where it's going to fall short. And so often we feel like this is happening because I'm doing it wrong or you know, there's something's working against me. But maybe it's just part of the journey. That maybe it's those steps along the way when we stumble and we fall and we actually get back up. That we learn that we're not alone. We learn that we can step out and try really hard things. And just because that thing didn't work out doesn't mean the journey is over. It's just a valuable lesson. The thing is that this is a really important thing to internalize. I do my best to internalize this. God is far more interested in who you become than what you do. God is far more interested in who you become as a person than what you do. But what influences who you become? What you do. And that's the cycle, right? That if Peter's only goal was, I'm going to get as far as Jesus, I'm going to be the guy who holds up going, I did this, no one else ever did. He wouldn't learn anything from that. He probably would have gotten cocky about it. Right? But in that failure, in that sinking, he learned that lesson. That you can get it wrong, you can fall down, you can fall short, and you can still carry on. That God's not going to stop trusting you just because you fell down one time, or 10 times, or 20 times, or 30 times. It's part of the journey. And so as we look at our own lives, getting back to that question, how do you see the remainder of your life? You know, how many marbles do you have left? I jokingly lost all mine a long time ago. All right, but how many more, if you were doing the same exercise I'm doing, how many marbles do you have left? You've got enough to do something. There's something on your heart, there's something on your mind that is drawing you. Is it the voice of God guiding you? Try to discern it, connect with Him, pray about it, read His Word, you know, be surrounded by other people who are pursuing that. And as you feel that call, and you may not be 100% confident, but there's just this thing that kind of just keeps holding on to you. Take those steps. It may not succeed the first try. It probably won't. But God will do something in that, and then you will grow, and you'll become more of a person who can do more. And the way we grow the most is by serving the people around us, right? That it will have times of fear. Important things will be scary sometimes, But as you stay in that journey, you grow, you become more capable, you do more things, you grow some more. And in the time we have left, we can really look at our lives and say, I did the things that God called me to do. And there's truly no greater satisfaction in life than pursuing that path. Pursuing that path free of fear. Free of fear that owns you. It doesn't mean you won't ever be scared, but know that you're active in what you're doing, and the fear is driven by the pursuit God has called you to.